Our scripture reading for this morning will be taken from the book of Proverbs, chapter 31. Proverbs, chapter 31, beginning with verse 10. And I'll be reading from the New American Standard Bible. An excellent wife who can find, for her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies belts to the tradesmen. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and bless her, her husband also, and he praises her, saying, "Many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates." For those who are visiting with us, you're probably not aware that we are going through a 5-year plan of reading the Bible. And so we currently are in the book of Proverbs. We will go immediately after this into Ecclesiastes and the Song of Solomon. And what I want to encourage you to do for this next week's reading, even though it's not broken up quite this way on our list of scriptures, we read the first 3 chapters of Ecclesiastes for this week. Go ahead and finish the book of Ecclesiastes for your reading this week, because Terry is going to take something from Ecclesiastes for the lesson next week. And then when we get back from Minnesota the week after, I am going to teach on the Songs of Solomon. And so we'll basically just have 1 week in those books. We finished up with Proverbs, and I think rightly so. The conclusion of Proverbs goes back to the concept of a godly woman. If you remember, whenever we started Proverbs, we had wisdom as well as the voice of evil calling from the streets and encouraging young men to different patterns or different styles of life. We named wisdom Sophia because that's the Greek word for wisdom in the New Testament, Sophia. And then we came up with a name for the woman of the night, and I apologize if your name is Cynthia. But we emphasized the concept of Cynthia to kind of get that idea. Well, we're going to conclude with Sophia today, even though it's not a name that's mentioned there. The virtuous woman is the wise woman. And so what we're going to have, we had a concept of the woman of wisdom building her house earlier. and calling the poor and the needy, what we're going to have is a woman of wisdom pictured as a wife, and a very faithful and industrious wife, a virtuous woman. And so as we look at her, what we're going to go through with is a concept of just how precious is this, certainly in the eyes of God, as we will conclude, but how precious should it be to you and me? Do you have anything precious in your house? Something that you guard, make sure is locked away? Something that you think is more valuable than anything else? Maybe you have some rare jewels. Perhaps it's a prized possession. Well, what we're going to see in this particular reading, and what we've already seen just in going over it briefly in the initial reading, is that we often don't appreciate, like we should, the value of a virtuous woman or an excellent wife. And we should. If you look at a society, what is a society made up of? People. You look at a community, and a community is made up of families. A community is only as strong as the households within it. And a society that lays a prize or a value to a household that is industrious, a household that is benevolent, a household that looks out for the welfare of its neighbors, that particular neighborhood or community is going to be a strong one. There was a time when communities were small. I can remember some places in Kansas where they said that there was almost a schoolhouse on every section. And the children from those sections where the farms were would come to that schoolhouse, and the community was very tight because they did everything together. If someone was in need, then they all answered that need. If there was something to be enjoyed, a harvest, then they all participated in that harvest. We tend to lose that. But here, this is hearkening back to the concept that a strong house, even just a single family, is a blessing to the entire community. I wonder sometimes where we're headed as a nation when we're not as focused as we need to be on mothers and fathers and children who are obedient. I think that is the very underpinning of a society that works. And to not have that will undermine everything that we want and everything that is good. So as we look at this virtuous woman, I think we need to see her as a prized possession. She is that which will make the family strong, but also bless the community as well. The word for virtue in the Hebrew here actually maybe takes on a little different connotation than what we would normally think. It's kalil or kahil, and it means a strong woman, and these almost take on masculine characteristics, a woman of valor, valiant, even has the concept of an army. You've probably met some women like that. And ability and efficiency. And so this virtuous woman, and as we looked at her, this is not milquetoast, is it? We look at this woman and what she does, and it's like, wow, she is responsible for a lot in her household. And so it's implied as the book of Proverbs ends that this is that which is what God would compare to rubies, not commonplace, priceless, to be sought after, and to be appreciated. Now, we're going to go through these six characteristics of a virtuous woman. I'm throwing them up there in quick order because we'll come back to each one of these. But what I want you to try and do, if you don't mind writing in your Bible, is to keep these particular headings in mind. And when we get to industrious, I'll go to a particular passage, and maybe you can just write out the word industrious next to that particular verse. Characteristics of a virtuous woman as described for us in Proverbs chapter 31 is that she's industrious, a good manager, she's resilient, she's confident, she's benevolent, and she is a wise counselor. That's saying a lot, isn't it? That'd be a good employee, wouldn't it? That would be a good partner. That would be a good friend. That is an excellent mate in the eyes of God. And we'll see that at the very end of the reading, of course, that these are the ways that God would have His children behave within their particular aspect of being a wife and a mother. So let's go now to the first one. She is industrious. Go with me to verse 13, Proverbs chapter 31. She looks for wool and flax and works her hands in delight. She is like a merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. Verse 18 says, she works into the night. Her lamp does not go out. Verse 19 says, she stretches out her hands to the distaff and her hands grasp the spindle. And in that weaving and putting together of the wool and the flax, it even says in verse 24 that she sells her garments on the market. So what is this woman? Well, she's very industrious. She is looking to the welfare, certainly, of her family, but she understands that that means that there must be an income. You say, where's the man? I'm not sure. He's sitting in the gates. He's sitting in the courtyard with the elders. But this woman, wow, she works well into the night. And she's not afraid to work with her hands, the spindle and the distaff. She is one who understands that if it's going to get done, she's going to do it. She's going to provide, not just for her own family, but also provide a way for others to benefit from her skill and her abilities to work. So, she continues, she takes care of herself. Verse 22, let's read that together. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Do you remember the time whenever feed sacks used to come in cloth that could be turned into dresses? I'm not quite that old, but I still can hearken back to the day when I saw a dress or two made from feed sacks. And that doesn't sound very, you know, stylish or complimentary. But there was a time whenever the woman of the household demanded that cloth come into her house in the feeding of the animals so that she would have that which would provide clothing for her children and for herself. And so there was great pride whenever the women of the household would lay hold of those. Does anybody not know what I'm talking about? You just imagine a feed sack and it's like a yard of cloth front and back. It could be cut and then it would be put into a pattern and a dress or a shirt would be made. What's that? You wore many a feed sack. I mean dress. But we see that she is not idle. He says in verse 27 about this woman, this virtuous woman, she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Simply put, in the New Testament, Paul wrote to the Thessalonians, if a man will not work, neither should he eat. How important is industry, or having an industrious attitude, a willingness to work and to pay your own way, to do that which you can? Now, I'm not saying that everyone can, but if you have the ability and the skill, whatever you do, do so with all of your might. I believe this is an attribute certainly of a virtuous woman, but it is a Christian attribute which we should emphasize more. God does not approve of idleness. If you can, then you should, is what God would say. If a man will not work, neither should he eat. And so she is proving, I think, an attribute of Christianity in the things that she does. She is a good manager. She directs the household activities. Verse 15. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. Now, you may have been raised on a farm and getting up before sunrise was not unusual to you. It wasn't for us, especially during the winter months when the sun comes up a little bit later. But you had a schedule to keep, and so you were up before the sun. And my mother was one that put food on the table. And usually it was more than you needed. But she got us ready to go outside to take care of the livestock or whatever chores we had to do. So this woman is. She provides for her maidens, for those who are serving her. So this is quite a household that she's taking care of. But she manages it. She doesn't complain. Verse 16 says that she manages even her money well. She considers a field and buys it from her earnings. She plants a vineyard. And so she's got a budget of her own, and she's got income coming in. We saw that in the making of clothes. They also make belts for the tradesmen. She is able to take that money and buy a field and plant a vineyard. That's someone who is not frivolous in their expenditures, right? Does this sound awfully practical? This almost sounds like a resume, doesn't it? She's a worthy woman. She is a virtuous woman. And we're going to see later on, how does her husband feel about this? Is he intimidated? Not in the least. He says, there are good women in this world, but honey, you beat them all. And husbands, that's a good line. That's a real good line to keep in mind. You are the best. You are the cream of the crop. There's no one that's been like you. You are the one that stands alone. She is a good manager. She's resilient. Look at verse 17 with me. She girds herself with strength and makes her arm strong. She girds her arm with strength. Why would she need that? Because sometimes the adversaries, the creditors, the ones who would do you wrong are at the door. She's not one to whimper away or to crawl into a corner and cry. No, she's going to withstand the forces, whatever they may be. And so she girds her arms with strength. She stands ready to protect. Someone mentioned the other day about a lion that's moving through their neighborhood, a mountain lion. And the thought is that probably the bigger track is hers and the two smaller tracks are her cubs. Would you want to get between her and those cubs? It gives new meaning to she girds her arm with strength. It's like a bear and her cubs. You don't want to get between them. I've been taking pictures. I don't know if you've noticed, but Miles has three buffalo calves that are fresh. The last one was born, I think, just this past Wednesday, so there's three of them out there. And I take liberties with stopping the car and getting out with my camera and taking pictures. Last Wednesday night as we were going home, it was almost too dark to take pictures. But there's only one buffalo cow standing over the three that are bedded down, little calves. And you might say, did she have triplets? Well, I got out of the car to take a picture, and the one mother went, I don't know how they do that, but she almost sounded like she was ready to charge. She turned to me, and I won't do it again. She made that noise, and immediately there came an echo about 20 yards away, and here came that mother, and then immediately there was another, and here came that mother, and all of a sudden, all three calves were protected and being nuzzled by their moms. I was a threat. What were they doing? They were sending a clear message to me. Buster, you've come close enough. You don't have the right to do my children harm. Look at that. Resilient. Recovers from misfortunes or strain. She girds her loins with strength. Is she confident? She's confident because she believes in herself. Look at verse 18. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. Now what that tells us is though she is confident that what she's doing is the best thing that she can do, she is going to keep at it. She is not overconfident, but she knows that what she's doing is best for herself. It's best for her family. She knows that her merchandise is profitable. She is self-reliant. Her strength and dignity are her clothing, verse 25. And she smiles at the future. Wow. What a woman. Worthy to be married, worthy to be faithful to, worthy to be loved. She's positive about what the future holds. Verse 21, she is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She prepares for the storms of the future. In fact, 25, the latter part says, she is one who can look the future in the eye and do so with a smile on her face. This woman, we're going to find out her secret in a minute, is unusual. She's rare. And I know sometimes when I preach a lesson that some of you attempt to identify and say, well, I have that characteristic, or I don't have that characteristic. With this woman, I think even the men have to say, well, there's some things I could do a little better at. There are some things that I need to work on. She really is one who holds up a standard that is unique and positive and almost without flaw. And yet, for all of that, she is benevolent. Verse 20, she extends her hand to the poor. She stretches out her hands to the needy. They say if you want to know the heart of any leader, whatever position he or she may have, watch them with children, and you'll know the stature of the man or the woman. See how they behave when in the company of children, and not just their grandchildren, but strangers' children. How do they behave? How does one who is a leader respond to those who society says is of no account? The downtrodden, the less wealthy, the ones without power, the common man. And especially, how do they respond to ones who are in need? What does this woman tell us about herself? Though she knows the value of a shekel, and she works hard, even keeping the lamp on late at night, in order to bring home money, and she's got that field to pay for and that vineyard to tend to, when she sees someone in need, how does she respond? With a caring and sharing heart. We don't have to look far for that example. Look at Christ. In Matthew chapter 18, what did his disciples want to do? They wanted to keep the children away from Jesus. Now, what were they thinking? Not like Christ thinks, certainly. But they were thinking he doesn't need to be bothered. This is a rabbi. This is a teacher. And when he sits down, it's together men and women who want to know at his feet and to teach them. What place do children have? And yet, what did Jesus say? Matthew chapter 18. Suffer the little children to come unto me. How was Jesus amongst children? How was Jesus when he passed a funeral of a stranger, the widow's son of Nain that had died? Did he interact? Did he do good? What kind of leader was Jesus? Did he care? We sing that song, Does Jesus Care? When my heart is pained too deeply for mirth and song, when the burdens press and the cares distress and the way grows weary and long. You know, if I thought my God was insensitive, then I would be doubting his love. Does he care? Oh, yes, he cares. I know he cares. His heart is touched with my grief. God knows us, doesn't he? And Jesus said, suffer the little children to come unto me, for such are the kingdom of heaven. And except you become like little children. What was Jesus teaching us? To be benevolent. To consider those who are less powerful and less fortunate. We're going to look at the proverb of Agur this afternoon. This basically is the proverb of Lamech. We're not sure who Lamech is. If you start in the first part of chapter 31, you'll see that Lamech is the one who authors this proverb. Agur is the one who authors Proverbs 30. But Agur has some concepts that are so strongly along these lines that we'll bring those out of what it means to be godly, what it means to be one who walks as God would walk. And there's none of us that would say that God doesn't wish to be with us. In fact, Revelation says Jesus is even now if he's not already residing, knocking on the door of our heart, requesting entrance so that he might come in and dine with us and us with him. But she's not silent either. I mean, this woman is a wife. She understands that, but she is one who is industrious and resilient and confident and benevolent. But she's also a teacher. I pray that you had a mother who was a teacher. I did. And something about moms. Is it the softness of their voice? Is it the melodiousness of the way that they speak? Is it the contact, the connection that they have with our hearts? A combination of all the above, certainly. Mothers can reach us where fathers sometimes miss the mark. Here is a virtuous woman who understands that what she is matters to the next generation. And so verse 26 simply says, she opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. What's she teaching her children? What's she teaching her maidens? What is she teaching her household? These are the things that I do, but I do them because it is true wisdom. Here's Sophia, speaking that which is most important to the next generation, so that they might become what they ought to be. If you had a good mother, then you were taught. You were blessed, not only by example, but perhaps by an admonition or a rebuke from time to time. And you were schooled in a positive sense in the things that are best. We're going to see her schooling will come directly from the things that the Lord wants her to say because she fears him. So what is she? What is this woman? You say it's Superwoman. She just doesn't have a cape on. And you'd be true. You'd be right. But she is a blessing to anyone that comes in contact with her. She is a blessing to her family. She clothes them with scarlet. She is a blessing to her husband because of her and her activities and her industriousness and resilience and focus at home. Her husband can sit in the gate and be honored by others. Look at verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Whenever we visited the Holy Land, we went up to the city of Dan. And if you remember, Dan relocated from where his allotment was, and he moved up to the north part, the tribe did, and it wasn't a good thing, because Dan basically rejected what God had given him as a tribe, and he moved up to that land. But there was walls of Dan, there was an entryway into those walls, into a courtyard. And what they told us was that this entryway had, and it wasn't even raised up this far, but it had almost like a step that was bricked, and on that step would sit an elder, one of the oldest men in the city. And this was called sitting in the gate. Absalom takes advantage of this custom whenever he tries to rend the kingdom away from his father. He meets the people coming into the city at the gate. But what it was intended for is the elder men of the city, the ones who were wise and respected, would sit, and as people would come into the city, it was fine, how are you doing, how's your day going, but it was also, do you have anything that we need to decide? Do you have any problems? This was their court. Literally, this was the judgment seat. And the elders of the city, the ones most respected, would come in and take those seats and decide cases. Now, we have those that we're acquainted with who are judges and lawyers. They work hard at that. But in these communities, it was the men that were respected. What is the virtuous woman's husband doing? He is one of the most respected people in the city. It simply says, what did it say? Verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Her wisdom rubs off on him and vice versa. That which she does is an example for others to follow, and it's such an example within the community that the Bible says this virtuous woman compliments her husband on every level. So much so that because of her, he is respected as a man of judgment and leadership. Is that not true of our marriages? Don't we compliment one another? Aren't we known because of our mates and respected? That's the way it should be. And so the virtuous woman actually plays a part in the leadership of the community because her husband is free to make those decisions that need to be made. It's to such a counsel that Boaz came whenever he asked for the hand of Ruth. It was within the gates of the city. And so we can see that she is a blessing to her family, certainly, because she is so industrious, but she's a blessing to her husband because she is a reflection of his wisdom and judgment. Remember how we started? A virtuous woman who can find. She is more precious than jewels. Do we understand that today? Is this where we emphasize what's most important? What do we so often begin to say to our children? What career are you going to choose? What is it that you aspire to be on your own? And what do we lose sight of that actually unites and makes a society cohesive? I believe the proverb writer is saying, it is found in a virtuous woman. Do you know what we exonerate in this society? Do you know what we hold up as an example? Do you know what our daughters too often see as that which they want to hunger for and to become like? Do we forget the words? Charm is deceitful. Beauty is vain. Praise the woman who fears the Lord. Now tell me we wouldn't be a better society if we didn't take to heart the wisdom that's being granted to us by the inspiration of God. She is to be appreciated. Her children, it says in verse 28, will rise up and bless her. Her husband will sing her praises. Even God is pleased with her. Would that this kind of acclaim was what we sought. Would that we understood our place in God's plan. Husbands, wives, mothers, fathers, children. Within the community, strong families make strong neighborhoods, make strong regional, strong state, strong nations. Tell me upon what we base the very underpinnings of our society today. The reason why God is pleased with her, the reason she surpasses all wisdom, let's go now to the last few verses. The husband says of her in verse 29, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. Here's the key. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. She fears God. A virtuous woman bases her virtues upon what God proclaims as being strengths, of being valiant. We're told by the Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 6 that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the world rulers of this present darkness. We are an army that has an enemy, and that enemy is Satan. And what does Satan want to do? He wants to pick us apart and divide us, and every individual stand alone. Because if you can take an army and to make it individualized to the point that no one is standing shoulder to shoulder or understands their place, then what are you going to do? You're going to defeat them. In a more pastoral scene, it's the lost sheep away from the flock. What is it that unites us? What is it that makes her what she is? She is to be praised because she fears the Lord. Because she understands from where her strength comes, she realizes that she is but one, but she is a part of an army. An army that is a gift from God. And only God can bless us with virtuous women. Only in God can we understand what's true and what's right. Be thankful if your life has been touched by such a woman. Model your life after such an example. And never forget that fearing the Lord is the key. I don't want to preach Terry's sermon, but probably somewhere in next week's lesson, he'll get to the last couple of verses of Ecclesiastes chapter 12. After all has been considered, after all has been said, what is the duty of man? Fear God and keep His commandments. Have we lost that lesson? The virtuous woman teaches it, passes it to the next generation. Because in God we have hope. In God we have strength. And only in Him do we have life eternal. Won't you allow Him to be the way in which you walk as we stand and as we sing?